faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast. Folks, this is one of the most insane weeks I can remember. The week where the internals of the COVID hoax were spilled out in public, starting with insane thing number four. The media just didn't spin the story right of the Fauci texts because they isolated a single and admittedly shocking text by Anthony Fauci. I asked around a bit more, and another issue that came up that you need to be aware of, he writes about the shot. Since many people have significant cytokine storm and fever after the second dose, Fauci writes, this theoretically could be associated with miscarriage in the first trimester. Well, that story went far and wide, except in the mainstream media where it was blacked out. But what got missing was that he wasn't texting himself. He was texting the other Biden public health officials. In fact, the very ones who would later, for months, go on television and insist that these poor pregnant women get a shot that they knew darn well could cause a miscarriage. They wrote it themselves. Here's the part of the text chain that came after that hasn't gotten near enough attention. Dr. Rochelle Walensky then replies to Dr. Anthony Fauci's text saying, hey, you know, this could cause miscarriages, with definitely a good point, especially after dose two. That's oddly specific. She knew. She knew. And yet she went out there and told everyone to take it after writing that, just as Fauci did. Folks, this is your CDC director.
Importantly, no safety concerns were observed for people vaccinated in the third trimester safety concerns for their babies. As such, CDC recommends that pregnant people receive the COVID-19 vaccine.
Again, she was saying that over and over and over again on television to pregnant women after writing. Definitely a good point, especially after dose two. Now, notice what she did in that clip I just played for you. She says, no safety concerns after the third trimester. It's oddly specific. Why? Because in the one study that was done that everybody's talking about, there was an 82% miscarriage rate in the first trimester. That's why she left that part out. But it gets even worse. The text chain gets worse. Enter Biden public health official number three. His Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, who agrees with the first two. Yeah, probably going to lose their babies, maybe, you know, if they get that shot. Yeah. He writes, this is really helpful. Thanks. Then he writes, I've been hearing the concern, too, about the mRNA causing mutations in the developing fetus as well. That's a really good point about the cytokine storm post-second dose. That monster. Biden Surgeon General then spent the next couple of months urging women to get a shot he knew might cause a miscarriage or mutations, and he didn't say a word. You know, I might point out on this podcast, Fauci might have been pardoned, but he doesn't have a criminal pardon. Neither does Walensky. Maybe we should look into that. Because after he agreed about the miscarriages and the mutations, he actually went on television again and again and again telling women to get it. Here he is in a forum looking a pregnant woman in the face and telling her to get it.
It's good to ask these questions because we want pregnant women to be safe. We want their kids to be safe. And I think the good news that we have with the vaccine, we have a large number of people in America who are pregnant who have received the vaccine, and it's continued to have a very strong safety profile.
This lying maniac then cites the CDC's data to assure it's safe. Well, you mean the data produced by Rochelle Walensky's CDC, the woman you were on the text chain with agreeing that the shot causes mutations in fetuses, oh, and also that it causes miscarriages, that woman's CDC? Yeah.
Well, the CDC has been tracking this data. And most recently, their report, when they looked at people who received the vaccine in their third trimester, was that the, both the moms did well and the babies did well.
See how they did it? They created a web of fake credibility. Well, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. Why, the CDC says he knows what Rochelle Walensky thinks. It's the same thing he does. That shot's dangerous to your unborn baby. Now, let me tie this whole incredible thing together. If you remember from last week's Battleground America, where we were looking at Fauci's diary, there was a stunning entry that really didn't get a lot of attention. It starts more drama with regard to the CDC and Rochelle Walensky. Remember what she was going to do. She had decided she was going to go forward and admit, the way Fauci describes it here, make the statement that the vaccines were not effective at all in preventing infection and transmission. But then he said, you know, we got to stop her. And the reason why, he says, is because it would undermine the Department of Justice's efforts at mandates for vaccines. Wait, DOJ, that's not a science agency. That's not a medicine agency. No, that's the Department of Justice. They were fighting in court, remember, over Biden's mandate that, you know, oh, you got to take it if your company takes federal contracts, his mandate. So they're basically, Fauci saying, well, we can't argue in court that they need to take the shot that hurts their unborn children and maybe makes them deformed if we admit there's no efficacy. So remember what he did. He says, after much going back and forth between the CDC and other docs, including me, Vivek Murthy, that guy you just heard there, the Indian guy lying, and to some extent, David Kessler, he says basically they convinced Rochelle Walensky to keep up the lie that these shots were effective, knowing what they do to pregnant women. So understand something. When Vivek Murthy is telling these pregnant women, including to their face, to get the shot on national television, he not only knows it's dangerous for their unborn children, he also knows it's completely ineffective. Now listen to him talk to that same pregnant woman, telling her it'd be dangerous if she didn't take it, which he knows is a lie.
One final thing here, which is that the risk of getting COVID if you're pregnant is serious, because then people who are pregnant, women have worse outcomes and the babies actually have adverse outcomes.
Nah, like I said, he knows the shot doesn't make a damn bit of difference. In fact, he and Fauci worked on Rochelle Walensky again to shut her up when she was going to tell everyone. Completely ineffective at preventing infection and transmission. He's lying to her. He's scaring her. He's scaring other women. You're going to get this. It'll be worse for you if you don't take the shot, knowing the shot will do nothing except potentially harm her and her unborn baby. It's one of the most astonishing medical betrayals in U.S. history. I'm kind of shattered by it. I don't know about you. It makes me wonder about every single medical product in my entire life that I've ever used. Is it all like this? Bet some of it is. How much? How much have they lied about? And folks, I want to add one more small detail from this week, and that's the extent of the lie and the cover-up. And then the more frightening question, as you contemplate the psychopathy of these people and how shocking it is. And it's this. We don't have an answer to it yet. Why? Why? Why do they do it? And the answers that start to go through your mind are pretty terrible. Folks, I've never been one of these, hey, they wanted to reduce the population eugenics people. It's always been to me, well, it was probably profit motive. I mean, you're talking $20 billion. These big shot companies, that's a massive motivator. I mean, you don't need to go to the paranoia of, you know, population control. But after what you just heard and that level of evil, my mind is beginning to go there. And I'm not alone. Folks, the one tweet that really stuck out in my mind this week was from moderate Meghan McCain. You know how moderate Meghan is, just like her dad, John McCain. Never wants to believe anything bad could be done by, you know, well, basically anyone in Washington. Well, Meghan McCain was pregnant during COVID. She took the shot. And apparently, she says she had a miscarriage right after. She tweeted, "Put Fauci in jail, exclamation point. I'm a woman who was pregnant and had a miscarriage during COVID." Then she writes, "This is not hyperbole. Handcuff. Perp walk, and put Fauci in a jail cell for the rest of his life. Not typical Meghan McCain stuff. You can hear the rage come through in the tweet. Insane thing number three. Apparently, the Iranians were trying to kill Trump for at least the fourth time. When U.S. intelligence was tipped off by Israel, but also detected a credible Iranian surface-to-air missile threat targeting President Trump's aircraft. This was during the July 8th, 2026 NATO summit in Ankara, Turkey. So intelligence reports that just came out this week revealed that operatives tracked Trump's exact hotel floor and spotted an individual carrying a shoulder-fired missile launcher near the summit venue. They also had another tip that a missile was going to be launched at his plane. So Secret Service and military officials arranged this emergency deception operation where the main presidential aircraft that Trump was supposed to be on departed as a decoy, carrying staff and journalists who were not informed they were being used as a decoy. That's a little dicey. Meanwhile, Trump was covertly moved out via a catering truck and boarded a smaller military transport aircraft. Again, the date, July 8th, 2026, makes it news this week because we just learned about it. July 8th, 2026. Think about everything that's happened since then. And how many times Trump's told us he almost reached a deal with the guys trying to kill him? I mean, this certainly makes Trump's August 3rd Truth Social post seem a little bizarre. Remember when he wrote, Iranian leadership is unbelievably duplicitous? They asked for a meeting. Some would say beg, talks begin, with more scheduled in the immediate future. And then they say openly and proudly that we're not even having discussions, that nothing's being talked about, that they're only dealing with sir, they try to kill you. Again, so I mean, the shock over them screwing you over at the negotiation table, I'm not surprised. They're on their fourth attempt on your life. And by the way, the other three happened under Joe Biden. Folks, two of them under the exact same Iranian leaders who we failed to kill. No, we didn't kill them. We killed the religious leaders, but didn't kill the people actually running the country. So when I just hear this, and I think long term, what is going to say? I mean, they sign all the agreements they want, and they're still going to try to kill us. And here's the problem with that. Maybe they'll succeed in getting Trump at the rate they're going. Maybe they won't. But what this means is you're going to leave them in place, cut a deal with them, and your plan is they'll just try to kill the next Republican leader and the next and the next. Is that your plan? I mean, it doesn't seem like a plan. So why are we negotiating with them? And also this, does this come up at the negotiating table? I mean, you are negotiating with the same people trying to kill Trump. I mean, one of the three is Galibov, the guy who put the $50 million bounty on Trump's head. I don't know if you knew that. If you can manage to kill the president, by law, Iran will pay you $50 million. Yeah, that was signed into law under the Speaker of the Parliament, Galibov, one of those we're negotiating with. So, folks, I don't know why these guys are alive, and I have no idea why we're still talking to them all these months later. And you might say, well, you know, Trump's waiting to dispatch them after the midterms. I certainly hope so. But here's my question. We know for a fact, because the White House acknowledged it, they called off a plot by Israel to kill them. Why? It was earlier this year. I don't know. Israel also claims that J.D. Vance leaked a second plot to kill them to the Turks, and that ground it to a halt. And then the third plot to kill them, Trump called off again. That one was in recent months. So, I mean, it's not like we can't kill them. We don't even have to kill them. We just have to let Israel do it. So I've lost the plot here. I can only hope that after the midterms, it begins to make sense again. Oh, and that Trump lives that long. But, folks, I just wonder, you know, Kushner's sitting there, Lutnick's sitting there, J.D. Vance is sitting there at the negotiating table. Does it come up? Hey, you know, maybe you could stop trying to kill the president just for a while, or no, did I mention it? Or it must be awkward. Insane thing. We've never seen this before. Insane thing number three. This may be hard to believe at this point, but the purpose of the National Republican Senatorial Committee is to elect Republicans. Although watching South Carolina Senator Tim Scott lead it, you would not know that. That's the key fundraising arm for the Senate. When Senator Tim Scott took it over, he made this fundamental promise. He would use that money to defeat Democrats, you know, the enemy, the socialists, AOC, Pryker, yeah, those people, Democrats, Socialists, America, those people, they're really terrifying. But no, no, Tim Scott has already broken that promise. We just learned spending $400,000 so far to elect Darlene Graham. That means Tim Scott spent $400,000 we desperately need to be used in places like Texas, where we're running neck and neck against some really scary Democrats to defeat what I guess Tim Scott and the Republican leadership in Washington considers to be the real enemy, conservatives, in the Republican primary. Word is that the NRSC is going to blow another $2.3 million in the next 2 weeks to defeat Ralph Norman. And they did something stunning. They should just stay the heck out. But right after the primary, where Ralph Norman, who actually really is a true conservative, all four conservative rating organizations rate him at 92% or higher. He's actually even hit 100% some years from the Heritage Foundation, been the most conservative member of Congress. That's how right wing he is. OK, so he terrifies the rhinos. But they did something kind of unprecedented, as reported by Politico. The leaders of the NRSC calling the other candidates in the race and pressuring them to endorse Darlene Graham this week. Again, that as the NRSC is on the cusp of getting ready to waste $2.3 million that should be spent putting Republicans in office to get Graham elected and defeat the most conservative senator that South Carolina's probably ever been allowed to have, at least in modern times. And it's super duper weird, folks, because we just can't seem to figure out where Darlene Graham stands. But gosh darn, everybody else can, like Lisa Murkowski, who a slight majority of the time votes with Republican. I'm kidding. Votes with Democrats. Yeah, she's a Republican, but in name only. Yeah, she votes with Democrats a slight majority of the time. And she loves Darlene Graham. She headlined a fundraiser for her last weekend, donated $10,000 to her campaign, and endorsed her. So it sure weirdly seems like Lisa Murkowski knows what Darlene Graham stands for. I mean, there's no way Murkowski would endorse or give her money if she was actually a conservative. And folks, the list is getting so long. Every rhino in the swamp seems to love this woman, and Democrats too. PBS has done a glowing piece on her. New York Times is up to five glowing pieces on her. Democrat Jim Clyburn practically endorsed her when he said she'd be great in the Senate and great for South Carolina. What's going on here? Now I know exactly what's going on here. All these donors are in a cold panic because there's a big fat amnesty bill sitting over in the House. They're getting ready to move it after the midterms. And I know that because it's been chatter about it, outside of this. But William Timmons, congressman from this area here in South Carolina, did an interview with our own Charlie James a couple of weeks back. And he said, yeah, they're going to move that amnesty bill after the midterms. What does it do? Amnesty for something like 6 million. But the problem with it is that if it's just for those who were brought here as, you know, young people or who've been here for a very long time, yeah, but USCIS is no way to detect document fraud. There's no built-in system. So anybody who wants to buy fake documents is going to get that amnesty. Folks, that'll end the country. It will. As soon as they get some kind of permanent status, get a pathway to citizenship, it's over. The Washington Times one time published a map. This was before Biden opened the borders and let in 20 million and showed what would happen if we did amnesty then. And do you know what it was? Every state in the nation flips at least purple, if not blue. But these corporate donors, mainly the tech bros and the Chamber of Commerce, don't give a damn. As long as they can get a couple of good quarters of profit based on a flood of visas, that's the number one thing they want, foreign workers that are cheap to replace Americans, open borders, non-removal of the illegals, and preferably amnesty, both to create more workers, dilute wages, but also to act as a magnet when Trump's gone to get these people over the border. So they need people to vote for this amnesty bill badly. But here's their problem. The rhinos are dropping like flies. And this is good news, folks. And they're in a cold panic, okay? When you look at how many rhinos they've lost, evil Tom Tillis, a nasty piece of work, so nasty that he can't win his Republican primary. He's gone in the state of North Carolina. Then you got Kentucky, where they thought they could push Mitch McConnell's protege through, but Trump actually did the right thing for once and endorsed the conservative in the race, and he beat McConnell's handpicked replacement. So he's gone. Nasty Louisiana Republican senator, and I put Republican air quotes, Bill Cassidy lost his reelection bid because he's really a Democrat. And in Texas, actual conservative Ken Paxton miraculously beat John Cornett, another wannabe Democrat stuck in the hill of a red state and so forced to run as a Republican. And then on top of it, to lose the fifth one, Lindsey Graham, folks, this has all been the last like 3-4 months. So, and maybe see Lindsey replaced by a conservative. They are in horror over this. So they've dispatched Tim Scott, who is normally permanently on vacation and doesn't check in much, and given him the task of destroying Ralph Norman. This should be an interesting race, folks. But understand this, they're already character assassinating him with just lie after lie after lie. He's not going to have a lot of money to fire back. So everybody needs to go to the polls. But that's how insane it is, folks. Even in this era where Tim Scott himself is on television, as he just was, I saw him on Fox News, talking about how bad Democrat Socialists of America are, he's frittering away cash, looks to be close to $3 million, trying to defeat what he considers to be the real enemy, me, you, and conservatives. Insane thing number one. We have a name for it now. What you call it when the Biden crime family commits crime after crime after crime after crime, and the FBI puts a full-time team into covering up his crimes. There's a name for it, Round River, and it was just declassified this week. See, the problem was, as the Biden family began shaking down Ukrainian officials in a very illegal way, the tips about their crimes from people both foreign and domestic started rolling in. In fact, 14 different informants made the mistake of calling up the FBI and going, yo, the Biden family's breaking the law. Well, when somebody does that and an enterprising FBI agent opens a case, they have to. Every time they get a contact like that, it ends up on the server. And so to protect the Biden crime family, Round River was launched by the FBI during the 2020 election by a task force of FBI analysts, tasked essentially with making sure that the Biden family got away with their crimes and never paid a price for them. That's right. Now, the task force officially claimed it was fighting malign foreign influence. But what it was really doing was slamming, smearing, and maligning and spying on those who wouldn't shut up about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden's crime. The FBI in Round River, the FBI analysts sought to dismiss significant evidence in the Bureau's possession, which included Hunter Biden's own laptop, but certainly wasn't limited to it, to the corruption of the Bidens. Why do they need to do that? Because these informants were also going to Congress. Some of them were going to the conservative media, and they were having a really hard time keeping a lid on it. So they launched something called the Foreign Influence Task Force, tasked with investigating and going after anyone credibly accusing the Bidens of criminality, mainly in Ukraine. By the way, this was at the same time they were impeaching Trump over his non-actions in Ukraine. Anyway, the intel on that was declassified this week, and of course it was given to John Solomon, who promptly published it. He writes, Round River was used as a political tool to neutralize the corruption narrative around Biden. It wasn't just a narrative, it was true. Anyway, the Democrats' 2020 presidential nominee, rather than address the true national security threats his criminality posed. Their target? Not the criminality of the Bidens, but the CHSs, the confidential human sources that kept reporting the Bidens' criminality. Most especially illegal deals with the Ukrainian energy company Burisma and its executives, who the Bidens worked on making sure didn't go to prison. Now, keep in mind, Burisma didn't just sell natural gas. Yeah, they also traffic in bioweapons. So there's that. But the operation, folks, instead of targeting the Bidens, initially targeted Trump's lawyer and former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani for making the mistake of investigating Hunter Biden's laptop. They accused him of being a Russian asset and trafficking in Russian information and indicted him in federal court. And then, of course, released all that to discredit him so that the very obvious crimes committed on the laptop that were documented there could then be pushed to the side. It got so ridiculous that when the FBI learned that Bill Barr Trump's attorney general was investigating the Biden controversies. They labeled him as a potential Russian asset, as well as two IRS whistleblowers who were tasked with investigating the Biden money laundering. They, too, were investigated, as were Senators Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson. Of course, part of the reason for this is that you could then leak that to the media. You could go do briefings, what they call defensive briefings is what they did. They'd go do defensive briefings to all these people, say, hey, now that's fake. Those aren't real Biden crimes. That's just the Russians. And then what they would do was turn around and leak that to the media. Oh, we just briefed them about the Russian interference there. That's, yeah, it's bad. And so that way, when these people came forward with the evidence of the Biden's crimes, they'd immediately be pre-discredited, folks. Unbelievable. I've said it this way. If I was a bank robber and I decided to rob banks in Greenville, can you imagine having your own internal crew inside the Greenville police who would cover for you? Who, if, you know, a bank branch manager called 911, instead of going after me, would start investigating him till he backed down? Yeah, that's what this was. Folks, here's the thing. I'm giving Trump and Kash Patel till after the midterms, before I lose my mind, to clean out this FBI. But folks, they got to go. Whole divisions of the FBI have to go. These people, a lot of these people still inside the FBI. I'm talking hundreds have got to be broomed out of there. Because folks, this is going to start again the second Trump gets in the helicopter and flies away, and the country won't survive it. We've got to go in there with a hatchet and cut it down to almost nothing. By the way, if you've noticed, it is Thursday, and this is the Insane Things podcast. Normally comes out on Friday. I'm taking the day off tomorrow on Friday, so I'm hoping that this will cover both days. But we'll be back with another episode on Monday. So have a wonderful weekend.
With Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.